Welcome, everyone, to episode 003 of the Spectacular Comic Book Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Reiner. Today, joined by someone a little different that you don't know yet, we have Carrington Martin here. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're on the show. Kyle Federline wished you could be here. He had some family stuff come up, and we wish him the best with all of that, and he'll be back hopefully next week. But Carrington, I know you're a huge superhero fan,
yes, sir.
Of movies, just like Kyle. Not so well-versed in comic books, though, so you kind of fill the same role, which is awesome.
Indeed. I think my only comic book experience I have are the Bionicle comics that came free with your Lego subscription back when I was a kid. It's the only comics I've ever read.
Well, you do have a leg up on me on Bionicle comics. I've never read those myself. But I had you read all five books that we're reviewing this week.
Yes.
And a wide variety. They kind of go all over the place. We're going to start with a huge kind of event in DC Comics' universe. Wonder Woman issue 750, weighing in at 96 pages. This thing was a monster. I'll just say this right out of the gates. I adored it. I thought it was really cool to see all these different creators, writers, and artists come together to tell a bunch of different stories, past and present, about Wonder Woman.
I will say for myself, because I never really, you know, as we mentioned, never really read many comics. So diving into this one was a mountain I had to climb for sure. And I really liked that it was a bunch of different stories told in one thing, but it was still a lot to read. And
the one thing I'll say is the Wild Hunt, the first story there, was the conclusion to her Year of the Villain story for Wonder Woman. This is a thing that's going through all of DC. Everybody is kind of experiencing this onslaught of villains. I thought that was the best story. It was kind of weird because it was like bringing the band back together. Mm-hmm. But by band, it was her actually getting her headband back, her lasso, sword, and then her gauntlets. And it was kind of cheesy to see all that happen, but at the same time, it's like, okay, she's back in form, moving forward. She's going to be awesome, even though her bracers, her gauntlets are kind of wrecked up a little bit. I liked seeing her on that last panel of that story, being the triumphant Wonder Woman we know and love.
I agree, and I was very confused by all that because I'm like, it just kind of throws you in, especially for someone who didn't know this all was happening. So I was like, she doesn't have her lasso, she doesn't have her headband, and here's this villain, and it's all coming together, you know, where she gets everything together. I'm like, I kind of have to reread it a couple of times to kind of get a grasp of what was going on.
But that's the kind of weird thing about this book is that first story was a conclusion, and then everything else was kind of its own thing, right? Like, did you find that it was easier to follow those? They were shorter kind of side stories, or I guess you could call them pocket stories because they kind of fit into different times in her life.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of thought of it kind of like an Animatrix kind of thing where it was a bunch of different stories trying to tell kind of just their own thing. Every artist and writer, you could tell, had their own spin on things. And it was a lot easier to follow because I could tell that, okay, we're telling different stories here and it's different parts of her life as well, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it ends on kind of a crazy note with Scott Snyder, who's done remarkable things with Batman for probably a decade now. It seems like he's been writing different Batman stories for a long, long time. And he does something a little different with Wonder Woman and Diana. You have Alan Scott there, Green Lantern. I thought that was very cool. I really enjoyed it. I haven't read a lot of Wonder Woman throughout the years. Every once in a while, I'll jump on for a 6-issue arc or something like that. But this, I felt like I just got a ton of information about who she is, kind of where she's going. So I think the issue definitely served its purpose of what DC wanted, of being this big epic kind of end, but at the same time, being a good jumping on point for people. What do you think about that?
I would think so. It was almost felt like a celebratory issue of Wonder Woman as well, which I thought was really cool. Because, I mean, I grew up as like a kind of like a DC person, watching, you know, Justice League and the Justice Friends and Batman and all that fun stuff. So I've always enjoyed Wonder Woman. So it was nice to kind of just delve into some of her history and just different aspects of Wonder Woman I didn't know about. And it was just kind of, it was a very fun read and I wish I could have kept going.
I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10. And I highly recommend it. It's expensive. It's $10. But I do think if you've always been interested in Wonder Woman in the comic space, this gives you a ton. Like, you really get a bunch of different flavors and a good idea where they're going next. How about you?
I'm going to give it an 8 myself. This was the last one I read out of everything you gave me, and I had a lot of fun with it, and I would highly recommend it for anyone out there who's just trying to get into comics, because it kind of gives you a bunch of different flavors all at the same time.
And the biggest surprise of the week for me is Web of Venom, The Good Son, number 1. Marvel Comics' official description of the book reads, Dylan Brock and Normie Osborn survived the trials of absolute carnage. But what's next for the Goblin Child and the Son of Venom? This story, Carrington, is absolutely crazy in the best possible way. You have these two teenage kids hanging out, having a sleepover since Dylan's there now that his father's off on an island battling demons and all that stuff. They're just chilling out, and then all hell breaks loose. You have Dylan revealing that he has a piece of carnage with him in a little vial and shows Normie what he can do with it. These kids need to be locked up right now. Like, these kids are going to be the villains of the future. Like, the way they interact with each other, the craziness they get into, just their mindset of where they're going is absolutely terrifying. But as a reader, also really interesting in a very different way than you see in most comics. Most villains are just kind of there on day one. They're personified as the villain we've known for 50 years, be it Joker or, you know, anyone like that. But we're actually seeing these kids kind of grow almost like Robin into Nightwing, right? Like, you know, Normie's going to be a goblin of some sort. Mm-hmm. And it looks like Dylan, boy, he might be the next Carnage. I don't know. What did you think of this one?
So this was the second comic I read out of everything you gave me, and I was floored by it. Like, I could not put this down. Everything from the writing to the art, the overall story, like, this was such an insane story. A lot happens in a very little amount of time, but at the same time, it all makes sense. It all flows very well. These kids, I'm surprised, like, as the parents for the kids, I was just kind of like, how can they not pick up on some of this stuff? Are they just blind?
And this one's written by Zach Thompson. I should point out Wonder Woman had like a billion creators on it, from Gail Simone, you name it. But this one, Zach Thompson knocks this out of the park, truly gets into the head of these kids in a fun way throughout this issue. You even see another symbiote from Absolute Carnage that kind of comes in and saves the day. Actually, is their household cat?
Yeah, I thought that was actually a really cool twist, because, you know, in the beginning, he's a cat, and then towards the end, he turns into this, like, big figure that comes, like you said, saves the day, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. I didn't know you could, like, shapeshift and stuff.
I'm going to give this one a, you know what? I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. Oh. It held my interest from start to finish. I can't wait for issue 2. This is, of our 3 episodes, we have Thor, and we have Star. That was another great issue. And then you got to get this one. Like, you absolutely have to read Web of Venom, The Good Son. And true to the name, like, remember that old Macaulay Culkin movie, The Good Son, where it was like, no, he's not a good son at all. He's actually like the worst person in the world. These kids fit that profile. Oh, bad things are going to happen. I don't know if they can write this ship, but maybe that's what's cool about this, is we're seeing evil in its infancy, like in its actual infancy, and it's gonna erupt in some hopefully meaningful ways, both for Eddie to deal with and maybe Spider-Man. It seems like might have some new threats here. What score are you gonna give this one, Carrington?
So I'm gonna give this one actually a 10 out of 10. Dude, like, I'm serious. Like, I was floored by this one. Like, I was impressed. And it really set the bar for things. I'm going to actually continue reading it as they come out, because I'm really interested to see where this goes. And it starts off with such a just a banger for a number one issue, for like a new series kind of thing. And I'm like, this story, I don't know where it's going to go, but I have to know where.
And now we're taking a look at Atlantis Attacks, number one of five. This is a limited series. It's kind of an epic event in the Marvel Universe. Carrington, set this one up.
Sure. The armies of Atlantis face Atlas in a showdown destined to shake allegiances and break hearts. Amadeus, Cho, Silk Wave, Shang-Chi, and all the heroes of the Atlas have bonded with each other after the challenges of War of the Realms. But when a terrible secret incurs the wrath of King Namor, who's the true friend and who's the true enemy? A titanic tale of love and betrayal, heroes and monsters, gods and underdogs, plus the shocking return of Jimmy Woo and the original Agents of Atlas.
Very nicely done. So basically all you need to know is it's got Namor on the cover, and Namor, nobody knows what to do with Namor. Namor kind of sucks, right? He's the B-grade Aquaman. We all love Aquaman.
Yes.
And in true fashion, Namor shows up in this book. He threatens the surface world. In this case, it's a new city that's just kind of been built from scratch, and it has teleports and all sorts of cool stuff. Sounds very much like the new X-Men books right now. I don't know what's going on with that, why everybody has teleporters from Star Trek all of a sudden, but hey, I guess it works for narrative purposes. But anyway, Namor shows up, and he's like, yo, gonna destroy the city if you don't give me back my dragon. And yeah. Amadeus immediately punches him in the face, and then Namor's like, you now have one day. And he just goes swimming off. Namor sucks. What's going on here? The story itself goes interesting places. There's a big twist at the end, which I don't mind spoiling because it's very strange. And the last panel reads, Agents of Atlas meet the Agents of Atlas. And you have two different Agents of Atlas teams standing next to each other. It's very strange, but you know what? It kind of works as a setup for the next issue. It looks like we're going to have two teams, two different versions of characters going at each other. Despite Namor being in this book, I'm going to give it a decent score. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Carrington?
Okay, so I'm not familiar with this storyline or these heroes or these people very much. Or at all. So everything was new to me. So jumping in, I was kind of overwhelmed by everything. Oh, it's a ton of characters.
Silk and Amadeus and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And describing me, it was hard to keep track of what everybody was doing, what their personalities was and everything. And I thought it was kind of cheesy in the beginning because it talks about one of the characters, Amadeus. And it says I'm supposed to be this way. I'm supposed to be cocky and all this stuff. And I'm like, that's I don't know if I like that or not. But all right, I'll just go with it. And then, boom, a fight pretty much breaks out. And there's a giant monster. And I'm like, there's a lot going on. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to handle all this. So to me, it was just very overwhelming. It was a fun read. But I feel like I can't recommend it also, just for someone who's so new to all this. All
right. That's interesting, because it is a point. It is kind of like its own standalone kind of thing. But there is so much history in all these characters and these allegiances that I get it. It's probably a little overwhelming. Your score?
I would think I'd have to give it around like a 5. I think 5 out of 10. I mean, the artwork is fantastic. And like I said, it's still a fun read, but it can be overwhelming for someone who has no idea what's going on.
The next book we're reviewing is Guardians of the Galaxy number 1. This is coming off of Donny Cates' series. And now Al Ewing is taking over. They are setting this up for the big summer event for Marvel, which is called Empire. Holy hell, do all sorts of crazy things happen in this book. This is the official description from Marvel. Once they were a team of misfits, now they're a family and they've earned their peace. But the universe is not a peaceful place, and it's only getting worse. The great empires are in turmoil. The rule of law is dead, and amidst the chaos, the gods of Olympus have returned. Harbingers of the new age of war, reborn to burn their mark on the stars themselves. Someone has to guard the galaxy, but who will accept the mission? And will they survive it? There's a lot of little things that are kind of hanging over from Donny Cates' 12-issue series. And I think Al does a pretty good job of addressing those in ways for readers. Obviously, I read those issues before, and I'm just kind of assuming that just by what I read and how he kind of frames it. Carrington, did you kind of get that you understood things that were going on? He did a good job describing it, or were you a little confused by it?
All right. So, yeah, I get that there was just a lot going on beforehand. But in those first few panels, I have to reread it a couple of times through just context clues and stuff as to what was going on. I get the Kree and the Skrulls were at war, And, you know, now we're about to face this new threat that's facing the galaxy with these gods, you know, awakening and all this other stuff. Like, those first few panels really set up what's about to happen. And I think you can really, you don't have to read the previous series to get what's going on here. Al Ewing does a really good job of trying to set things up and preparing you for what's to come.
Yeah, and this also comes off of Annihilation, another kind of month-long Marvel event. There's a lot of pieces to keep track at times, but again, you get the context right away. You get the big beats. Coming off Guardians of the Galaxy, you learn that Rocket almost died. He's reborn. He has a new kind of vigor to him. He's wearing a suit. He looks adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
but he's actually happy for the first time in his life. Everybody else is kind of at different points in their life, and you really see Star-Lord at a point of just wanted to shake things up a little bit. And I think that plays out really well with Rocket. And yeah, they have some crazy setup for what's going to happen. These gods are back. Bad things are going to happen. And I loved it. I really, really had a good time reading it. Giving this one an 8.5 out of 10. Carrington, your score.
My introduction to Guardians was through the movies. And so I think like with maybe most people that are listening right now. So I was, you know, excited to read this one. This was actually the first one I read out of the everything you gave me. So I will say I was a little disappointed in that the Guardians themselves don't have a whole lot of interactions with each other outside of the beginning. It's mostly Star-Lord and Rocket, which their banter and their talk, like the way they talk to each other and the other characters is fantastic. And I wish we got more of that. Then there's this other guy I'm going through to see what his name is. He was wearing black and yellow.
Nova.
I really didn't like him all that much. I thought he was a bit whiny and just a little depressing overall. I loved all the other characters in their setup, just being introduced to them through this comic. But him, I was just kind of like, he's supposed to be, you know, getting this team together and everything. But he's very broken down. I feel like there was more to it that happened before that led him to this point. But at least in this comic, I was just kind of like, I wish he was a bit more confident in himself, basically, and in the team.
Yeah, you're going to see that a lot. They add a lot of characters at any given time, whether it's Cosmic Ghost Rider or, you know, Nova down on his luck. He lost his whole core in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a right to be kind of off his game a little bit. But he's always been kind of, I wouldn't say a flatline character, but not the most charismatic and not someone you would expect to be with the Guardians. So I think he's kind of an interesting fit for this story. But you will get a lot moving forward, I'm guessing, of the Guardians together. They rarely are off on their own. You know, they're misfits, they're dysfunctional, but they work as a well-oiled unit. What was your score?
So I'm going to give this one a 7 out of 10.
All right. Different strokes.
For different folks.
The next book we're going to look at is Ghostbusters. You heard about this last week. We interviewed Eric Burnham. He's the writer. The first issue's out now, featuring Winston. This takes place between Ghostbusters 1 and 2, kind of telling you what he was doing. Or maybe it is even in between at certain points in 1, when he just kind of comes on the team. And it shows kind of his training under the other Ghostbusters and the threats he faces. While I liked kind of his origin story, so to speak, not super high on the big bad of this book, which, Carrington, I laughed out loud when it happened.
Oh, out of all the comics, you know, I smiled at Guardians with some of the humor in it. I actually laughed with this one. like you said, I laughed out loud.
You have a ghostly spirit of Edgar Allan Poe that Winston faces down on. That's the first ghost he's taken on. Poe can turn into a bunch of crows, and guess what? He's going to be the big bad for the series, it looks like. It's kind of crazy. It's zany. It's weird that it's kind of separated with the four characters. I kind of want to see them all together, because that's, like you said about Guardians of the Galaxy, kind of what makes the Ghostbusters great is them all being together and having different approaches to things or different ideas of how to handle a situation. You get a little bit of the characters together in this, two of them together, but it's not the ensemble, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I that is one thing I was a little disappointed in, it because it's all from the perspective of Winston, and it's just how, like, his origin and stuff. And he gets the chance to interact with all of the other three, but it's not a whole lot, and it's very straightforward by the time you get to the end.
I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Part of the points is the smell of the book, IDW. I don't know what it is with the ink, but I just love it. They smell different than every other comic out there. Don't know if it's toxic or not. We'll have to do some research on that, but they have the best paper in the business, as I said last week. I don't know. It was fun. It's different. I like the Ghostbusters. Can't wait for the new movie. Every once in a while, I just like grabbing one of those comics, a licensed comic. You know, it's not just Ghostbusters. It could be anything. It could be Star Wars, anything like that. I like those. They're good palate cleansers for all the superhero books. Give you a little something different. Carrington, how did this one stack up for you?
Because I listened to the show as well, when I saw the IDW logo, I'm like, hey, I remember that from the interview and what Reiner said. Now, unfortunately, I got digital. I got all digital, so I didn't get that chance to feel the difference in the paper and things like that. But it just made me perk up a little bit. I'm like, oh, I'm going to pay attention a bit closer to this one than I have the others, because Reiner specifically mentioned IDW as a publisher. Overall, it was fine. I would recommend it because it's just a little fun thing. I'm excited to see what happens as it goes on and explores the different characters and things like that. But it was fine. It didn't like blow me away or anything like that either. But I thought it was a fun little comic overall. And it was the only one that, like I said, made me laugh out loud. But I would give it a nice, what you gave it, a 7 out of 10. I would agree with you on that one.
And that is it for our reviews for the week. Before we go on to what's coming out next week, let's listen to a call from one of our listeners.
Hey guys, I'm really loving the show so far. First time caller, long time listener. Wondering what comics you pick up each and every month because you just can't quite get enough of them. Need to see where the story goes. Also curious who or what it is that got you into comics to begin with. I'll hang up.
All right. That question is for me, Carrington, since you don't read any comic books. What I read, what okay. I guess have in my pull box each month is pretty much everything Batman, all the new X-Men books right now, Flash, Green Lantern, stuff like that. The big heroes I adore. I also don't like pulling too much because I like going out to the new release rack and seeing what's there. And if I don't get enough stuff in a week, I'll even go to the previous week or even into back issues to bring in more books. Like I have to have a steady diet of books each week. So that's it. Let's move on to next week's books. Here's what's going to be on store shelves and in digital for Carrington on January 29th. There's a new Detective Comics annual called City of Bane, The Flash number 87, right. Action Comics 1019. None of these are good jumping on points.
Which is a shame because I really love The Flash.
X-Men, I'm not separating stuff, I'm just kind of going in a different order this week. X-Men number 5, I highly recommend if you're reading any of the X-Books that you stay on just X-Men. Everything else has been a bit of a mess, but this seems to be the core book where all big things are happening. I know there was a big reveal in an issue of X-Force, but they kind of undid that right away. So just stick to X-Men. We got Justice League, The Immortal Hulk, Avengers, X-Force, New Mutants, Justice League Dark, Captain America, Monstrous, if you're over at Image, Outcast as well, Fallen Angels, Thor number 2, woo, can't wait for that, Star Wars number 2, that's also another book I'm looking forward to, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which just celebrated its 100th issue, is now on 102, Conan the Barbarian, The Terrifics, Green Lantern, and Spider-Verse number 4. I do not know what we're going to be buying this week. I know we said last week we would be looking at giving you a kind of a shopping list of what you can buy to read along with us. This week, I don't know. There's some more of those, the end books from Marvel. There's the end for Doctor Strange, Captain Marvel, and Deadpool. I don't really want to get into those. There is going to be Ravencroft. We did that Sabretooth book last week. This is its own kind of standalone series. That might be one that we'd end up doing, as well as Avengers the Wasteland. Maybe Amazing Spider-Man Daily Bugle number 1. We'll see. Those last three books might be the best ones that we end up doing, but we'll have to wait and see. I got to go kind of page through them, get the temperature on the release racks, and we'll go from there. Let's answer a couple more listener emails here. And Carrington, you could jump into some of these. Actually, Carrington, you might have already answered this one with your introduction. Oh. Hello, guys. What was your first introduction to comic books? Keep up the good work, and I can't wait for more. From a fellow podcaster at the Games My Mom Found podcast, from Stefan JD. My first introduction was way, way back. I might have been 5 or 6 years old. My dad had his own Mickey Mouse comics, those old 12-cent books, and I adored them. I would just page through them. I probably wasn't really reading them that well, but I loved the art, and those things are worth some money, but the ones that my dad had ended up being worthless very quickly because I ended up writing my name on them and putting in my own characters and drawing all over those, thinking they were like coloring books. So I kind of destroyed the value of them, but that was the first thing I remember ever reading in the comic space. I then went to, in Minnesota, we had a comic book store called Shinders. It was like a tobacco store / comic and sports card store. It was very strange, but for a kid like me, it was like as cool as a toy store, because once my eyes were opened on comic books, there were so many of them. They had all the back issues. They had the bins where you could get 5 for $1. So I'd just spend an hour as my dad was my dad collected baseball cards when he was doing baseball card stuff. I was going through the back issues of comics and just pulling out Batmans and all that stuff. Two of the first comics I remember buying and taking a chance on were Captain America. It was a Streets of Poison story. Brilliant story arc, by the way. That's something you got to read, Carrington. Cap basically gets hooked on drugs and loses his mind. Yeah, it's,
now that piqued my interest.
Yeah, it's really kind of shocking and something you wouldn't expect, but they take it in really cool directions. Not that drugs are cool, but when you upended a character like that and give him different struggles, it's always kind of interesting. And then the other one was an issue of Batman, and he was just kind of looking at a slide on the cover, like a blood sample on a slide that he was going to put in a microscope. And I just thought that his character design was so cool on that, the pointy ears and the white eyes. Took it home, read it, and it was just like, I got to go back. Like, we got to go back. Like, I need to get more of both of these books because they're just amazing. And we have another email coming in from, well, not the same person, but, oh, I like this introduction. Hi, Reiner and Kevin. Who's Kevin?
You know, as someone who shares the first letter as Kyle, you know, being a K as well, we get called all kinds of things all the time.
It says, first off, congratulations on the new podcast. I was on board from the first hint of this on Twitter. Wishing great success for you both. My first question is, will you consider possibly discussing older comics, compilations, trades, all that kind of stuff? Issues like Amazing Spider-Man 600. It's a great idea. Yes. You know, our last segment is dedicated to interviews and exploring different things in the comic space. And I think that we can definitely have something like older issues or some of the best comics of all time. And I think that'd be great for you, Carrington, and Kyle, and other people that are going to end up being on the show to be able to experience the best of comics and really understand what makes them tick.
I was going to say, you can always revisit Bionicle. You never got a chance.
How many of those did you read, by the way?
I read a good chunk of them. Because I remember being like 11 or 12 when they first started coming out with the Lego magazines, because they were free with your subscription. And you got a good portion of the series. Not the entire series. I didn't read the entire series, but I mean, I remember reading like the first like story arc, which was like, I don't even remember, like 10 issues, I think, something like that. So I know I read at least 10 issues.
That's, I might get a page into those.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
Says 6-year-old Carrington.
Exactly.
The reader, or the listener, by the way, Don, also has another question. Says, how do you feel about comic books based on video games, specifically where the comic's origin is from the game, like Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2, Overwatch had a comic for a while. Some of them are good. Some of them are just do a poor job of retelling the game stories, or just feel unnecessary at times, like kind of filling in gaps that you don't really need to be filled in. There was Injustice. You remember the DC fighting game?
Oh, yes.
Was adapted into comics and had a long life. I think it ran for like 4 years and was really popular because it was such a dark version of the DC universe with Superman being bad. So you got to take it by comic, I would say. I don't think you can just kind of label them all. I am a little worried when I see something on the rack that's like a Tekken comic book or something like that. I'm like, oh boy. Or what was the most recent one? Like Dark Souls had one and Bloodborne. And it's like, man, I don't even know what the story is in there. I'm just running around killing guys. It's a cool universe. But do I want to read about, you know, the backstory and all that stuff? I don't know if I do. So again, just got to go comic by comic on those and just kind of feel it out and go from there. Thank you so much for the letters, everyone, and leaving us voice messages. It is really cool to see that you're supporting us, want to interact with us, and we would love to hear from you again. You can find us all over the place. We're on Twitter. Anchor, especially. You can use anchor.fm to leave us voice messages. That's probably the best way to, we want you to be a part of the show, right? And that's the best way that you can do that. Thank you for filling in today, Carrington.
Anytime Kyle's away, I'd be happy to
fill in. Maybe we'll have both of you on at once and just really shake things up.
We call ourselves K&K, so I'd be happy to rejoin the
K&K
brothers.
Yeah, I don't like
brothers.
That so much. Maybe I got to find someone without a K in the name now. But we'll be back hopefully in 7 days with another episode. Hopefully another 5 to 6 comics that we can either say go buy it or stay away from it. We'll see you next time.